Blog Talk Radio.
Always remember our external perception. So as a result of this, we have an interview tonight. The God House of Christian Neighbors, not the fast Coca-Cola engine. What we say to America is be true to what you say to other people. Whether you have been China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I can understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I can understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they have committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest our rights.
Black power, and more black power. It's your brother, soldier, comrade, and battle shines down Hollywood. Back at it. This is the Overdrive. And so tell your neighbors, tell your friends, we are live on the air, continuing the tribute to that great warrior and freedom fighter, the Honorable Martin Luther King Jr. And now we'll be coming back at you with our brother here in this half, Brother Akinyele Umoja from the Malcolm X grassroots movement, and of course bringing back that great warrior who was lighting it up the last half, Brother Mukasa Richardson. Let's bring back in our national chairman as he'll take us further into our program and introduce our first guest. Black Power, Brother Chairman, welcome back.
Black Power, I just want to say that the scholar we're bringing on now is a brother who Dr. Khaled, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, and all black nationalists and Pan-Africanists respect. He took on many, many plights, and I want him to be able to tell his story to a black power listening audience tonight. And anybody who's in Georgia knows this brother by name. Anybody that understands scholarly work and anybody who reads good books went out this summer and bought the book We Shoot Back. This brother came downtown and took over downtown Georgia, some 32,000 students at the University of Georgia, Georgia State University over the African-American program. They're a Malcolm X graduate movement, and you done said and introduced them 12 times, Brother Shem, but we finally tracked them down on this busy day. Professor, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Black Power, my brother. And is Brother Mukasa still there?
He'll be back in a few minutes.
I was saying, what did y'all need me? You got Brother Mikasa?
Yeah, we talked to Brother Charles Steele about 20 minutes ago. He's in Germany. He wanted to do an international piece while they was doing the regular piece here in the anniversary over at Ebenezer. And we had problems getting back on at 10 o'clock, and he has a very fine line to come on out of Germany, and we couldn't get back on at 10:30. We wanted to come right back on at 10, but... Professor, right. I wanted you to come on because when it comes to sitting students in a room and teaching them the importance of African-American studies and African history period from a perspective of a person who's been on the battlefield like ourselves, from a person who beat them at their own game, got the PhDs in line, went back and has helped many, many African students here get into school and taught them the structure of teaching our people our history like other cultures, and back to Timbuktu, the first university in Africa. We just wanted to bring you on, been wanting to bring you on, and we know you got to get up early, so I'm going to be quiet and let you talk about your history and what made you write a book that we shoot back, what made you become a professor, and how was the struggle to become the head of the African-American study program at such a large college here in Georgia. And then you can come right into our topic matter tonight, Dr. King, in your own way. Can't nobody tell you how to teach. We got to teach your own, and I'll be quiet.
Thanks, Brother Hashim. Thanks for having me on the air with this very important program on this very important day. I've been involved in the movement of our people since I was a young man. I'm 59 now. I got active when I was 18 years old, and I got active in support of one of our brothers who was a political prisoner who was a target of the COINTELPRO program. Y'all talked about COINTELPRO already. That brother's name was Muhammad Ahmed. J. Edgar Hoover had identified him in 1967 as one of the most dangerous men in America because he was working with people like Robert Williams. Robert Williams, and many of your listening audience might not know, he was an NAACP leader who organized black people to fight against the Klan in Monroe, North Carolina. And so he aligned with them. He aligned with Brother Malcolm, other people like that. So I got involved in that case. And since that time, I just have been engaged in the struggle for my people. As you mentioned, I'm also a scholar. I consider myself a scholar activist or activist scholar. I began to do the research. I always like writing. I've written in movement publications before, and recently this year, as you mentioned, we published the book We Will Shoot Back, which looks at the struggle of our people in Mississippi who fought against Klan terror and other types of terror. And I document things from the 1950s all the way through 1979. That's part of what I've done. Now, how am I at Georgia State? If we look at our recent history, in 1992, the same year the people rose up around the Rodney King verdict, there was an incident on campus, on Georgia State's campus, where some white Greeks put in front of the door of the Sigmas a sign saying, "Niggas enter." And when some Sigmas saw that, Brother Eric Bridges, one of them, who's now a professor at Clayton State College, he took that sign around campus and let students see it. And then some students decided that they were going to go sit in the president's office as protests. But they took it from there. And then those at that time at Georgia State, they didn't have online registration. So they went to a place on campus called Sparks Hall where the students paid their registration. And they sat in there. And while that was going on, other students were shutting down the classroom buildings, shutting down the cafeteria. And it was just general chaos on campus. And one of their major demands is they wanted a Department of African American Studies. And that's what got our department there on campus. I was eventually hired. I was the third person, or really fourth person hired in that department. I was a historian, and I've continued to kind of work and link our department with people in the community. And I was blessed that in 2011, the department, my peers in the department decided I should be chair of the department. Or they told the administration that I should be chair. They strongly recommended that I be chair. That's how I've been there. You asked me to speak on Dr. King, and Dr. King is truly a son of our people. He comes right here from Atlanta, Georgia, as we know. He grew up during segregation. But Dr. King was really kind of being a Morehouse grad, being a academic himself, or somebody who has studied in America's university. When he went to Montgomery, Alabama, the people in Montgomery thrust Dr. King into the national and international spotlight as a leader in the Montgomery bus boycott. And I think what's significant about that boycott is, and y'all still with me because I ain't hearing nothing. Y'all still with me, Brother Hashim? Am I still on the air? But
yes, sir. You're live.
Yes, sir.
Just making sure.
And we got a lot of listeners, and if you're going to bear with us, you're going to be able to take some of these calls because these students are going to be ready.
Well, yes. One of the things I think about Montgomery that a lot of us miss is they were not able to wage that struggle without a certain level of unity. Number one, they united the local NAACP, the Sleeping Car Porters, the Women for Political Change, many of the churches in the local community, and they all formed a united front, an umbrella organization. And because they were able to unite their community, they were able to maintain a resistance for over 1 year and shut the bus system down in that city. And ultimately, they integrated the bus system, desegregated the buses there. And I know some people say, well, what does that mean in terms of Black people being able to sit next to white people? That wasn't the question. The question was, is there, in the case of Rosa Parks, that she was on a bus and she would have had to give up her seat for a white person, if y'all understand. So it's not just about sitting next to white people. It was that our elders paying a fare on a bus had to give up their seats for white people. And so we applied the resistance of that community. I also think it showed how the people were ready, and the leaders didn't think the people were ready because, you know, the leaders didn't think that people would be able to boycott even one day. And they only called for one day, but once they saw that one day was successful, it went beyond one day to 1 year, over 1 year. So the leaders themselves, and sometimes the leaders today, don't know where the masses of our people are at and what's really going on with them. And we always have to rely on the masses of our people. They'll be the basis of any change, any significant change that happens for our people. But King was thrust up in that struggle. He became a nationally and internationally known person. I think King really kind of was in the middle of the movement. You kind of had the most grassroots, the most dedicated, the most militant elements of the movement were represented by people like Brother Mukasa and Brother Kwame Ture, Brother Jamil Alameen at that time, H. Rapp Brown. Even when they were involved in not picking up the gun and things they would do later, they were the ones who would challenge the system the most. And Dr. King was kind of in the middle, and of course you had more conservative leaders like Roy Wilkins and others on the other side. But Dr. King, as we know, and as a COINTELPRO program by J. Edgar Hoover laid out, that they were kind of afraid that he would adopt Black nationalism, and they were afraid that he had the potential to be someone that can unite the Black nationalist movement, particularly as we had the development of Black Power as a slogan and as a movement you know, after 1966, and of course, Baba Mukasa was clearly a part of that. And I think there, you mentioned about him being assassinated. Clearly, there are two things that led to his assassination. One was the thought that he could be this person who could, if he decided to, he could unite the black movement at that particular time. Because as I stated earlier in the case of Montgomery, unity is a requisite. It's needed. But number two, the other thing with Dr. King is he became to be more internationalist in his perspective. He began to articulate the United States was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, and he took a stand with the Vietnamese people in their fight to get national liberation from the United States and other European powers. I should also add that Dr. King promoted a position that really today would be called reparations. He called for black people particularly who were poor, and other poor people in this country really, to be compensated by the United States government. He called for a radical restructuring of American society. He called for socialism. I know it's a bad word today, but he called for the redistribution of the wealth in American society, to take from the rich who have been ripping us off for centuries. Because if you think about how our mortgage system works, how the mortgage system works in this country, it's not ours, right? I didn't create it. But if you look at the mortgage system, you look at the system of banking in this country, really not just African people, but all people in the United States are pimped by these pimps who run the mortgage companies and the banks. And so Dr. King looked at the system of unjust enrichment and wanted the redistribution of wealth to the people who actually created the wealth in this country. That's what he was about, and that's why forces to be took him out. Now, if you want to do some research on this, I will go back to the Memphis Commercial Appeal, and it showed how Army intelligence in the United States had targeted Dr. King. They had labeled him a communist, and they were they had done what was necessary to try to not only destroy his movement as J. Edgar Hoover had done, but also to kind of take him out of here. If you talk to the King family, even though a lot of people are critical of the King family on most things, one thing they were united on, that it was a broader conspiracy that led to the assassination of their father, not just one man by the name of James Earl Ray. So with that, you know, I'm willing to take any dialogue with some of your audience while I'm still on here.
Yeah. That was great, Doc. And that's one thing I had brought up in the 8 o'clock hour that I had did a little research, and then I wasn't shocked, but even in Memphis, it's on record in a civil rights case in 1999 that the MacPherson, I'm looking for it as we talk, but the military intelligence group based out of Fort Pearson here in Atlanta had followed King to Memphis. And some people testified in 99 that was true, and then some of the people who were involved admitted that the military was following him also. Sean, I do not want to...
What's interesting about Dr. King is... There was a surveillance on Dr. King from the time he was a Morehouse student. That's when the intelligence had started on Dr. King. He had gone to a meeting as a college student that they thought was communist, and they began to do surveillance on him. But not only had surveillance been done by the U.S. government on Dr. King, but on his father and his grandfather. So This was nothing new, and this was a part of what they did at that time.
Right, and we was talking earlier.
They released in the government recently about the NSA and all of what Snowden had revealed and all which has been exposed on WikiLeaks. This is something that goes back. You know, we can take it back to the Honorable Marcus Garvey. But really, we could take it back to when they had snitches and informants even on our plantations when we were when our people were picking cotton or chopping sugar cane and other things, right? So it goes way back.
I was talking to Brother Chukwe Lumumba, who will be on in a couple of weeks with us, and he was talking about some of the same things you just said. And one of the things I found, and Sean, get the callers ready. One of the things I found, Doc, that was fascinating, that Papa King had led marches in 1935, and also he had he stood his son up, like you said, at an early age, and King went to Connecticut with a group of college kids and worked in tobacco fields in Connecticut. And King said when he came back to Georgia after that visit to go to Connecticut and be able to ride trains and buses and transportation and not be in segregation, it was a breath of fresh air. And then he said he couldn't believe when he made it back to Washington, D.C., not Atlanta, Washington, D.C., the segregation signs popped up, and he said he never was the same. Sean, mm-hmm. I do not want to cheat our audience from this brilliant professor, so I'm going to mute my phone and let you go to the phone line.
All right. The number to call is 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. We're on live here at Black Power Radio. The after show, let's go. Eric Code is 347-355, 347-355. You're on here with our brother. I can yell it out. You mold you. Let's go for it. Black Power, welcome.
Black Power.
Black Power, Power, brother.
Black Power. Hello?
Black. Yes, sir.
All right, go right ahead with your question, my brother.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I just came on because I was doing something. I didn't get the chance to hear anything, but I'm El Shaquan on the Brooklyn area. And I basically was following y'all from earlier at 8 o'clock, and I received a lot of information that I really didn't know about before and just came to the knowledge to. And I wanted to thank y'all brothers for sharing it, you know what I mean, and opening my eyes to things I didn't know before. And I want to say Black Power to that. All right,
my brother.
Thanks a lot.
All right, he's just giving us thanks. Next caller, Erico, 347-406, 347-406. You're on live with Black Power Radio. And our brother and comrade, I can yell at your mold, your chair. Malcolm X grassroots movement there in Georgia State as well. Talk to him, Black Power. Your question, your comment, go right ahead.
Black Power, this is Brother Supreme again. I'm back on from the Queens chapter of the new Black Panther Party. I'm just... Right now I'm listening in. I'm just absorbing all this knowledge of, you know, different, you know, scholars coming on and speaking, you know, and it's just a blessing to be on this and to hear these different great speakers online speaking about the legacy of Dr. King and Malcolm X. So right now I'm just listening in, and like I said, I'm absorbing all this knowledge, and that's all I have to say, really. Black Power.
Black Power.
Black Power. People showing gratitude. I want to ask you a question, Brother Akinyele. Why do you think that it is that here we are in 2014 and the majority of the American population, I'd say a vast majority of the American population, does not know that the U.S. government was found guilty in conspiracy to murder Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.? Why are we still saying in 2014 that it was James Earl Ray, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think it was Malcolm who said the U.S. government is a master technologist. He actually said the white man was, right? But if we think about what happens in our educational system and what happens in the mainstream media, what they call the mainstream media, a lot of it is really for social control. So we are not provided with the type of information that's necessary to produce a certain type of consciousness. It's only through venues like this and stuff we do on a grassroots level. And it only means that we need to work harder to make sure that we can get our people enough information for them to see what's really going on. You know, and a lot of times I think we have to be patient too. You know, if somebody is in a major cataclysm, like a car accident or something of that nature, sometimes they even have to go to sleep in order to survive that great trauma they went through. And so it takes time. If you've ever been in an accident and, you know, a bad accident I'm talking about, and been disoriented, sometimes it takes you a minute to get your bearings. And so we're going to have to be patient with our folks. Just because we got a little bit of information doesn't mean that we are superior to anybody. But we're going to have to take our time and be patient teachers of our people. Now, I know there are some of you who are out there who are saying, yeah, but we don't have enough time. You got to prepare for whatever you could deal with now. But ultimately, we will not be able, we said, you use the slogan Black Power. We won't be able to really have Black Power until our people are, like Kwame Ture talked about, organized. We got to organize all of our people, a significant amount of our people, like Marcus Garvey attempted to do, to be able to have the power to where we can control the education of our children, and we can create the type of economic support that we need to have in our community so we don't have to worry about unemployment and things of that nature, if y'all following me. Hashem, Brother Zingo mentioned Chokwe Lumumba just recently being elected to mayor, but Chokwe doesn't control the economy of Jackson, Mississippi. He just controls a mayor's office. And so we have to organize our people to be able to seize the control of the economy. And that really, that just means we got to be, what, spending with each other, right? We got to pool our resources and do things as necessary. There are groups here in Atlanta I'm proud of, like the Uhuru Esusu, where brothers and sisters are pooling their resources to be able to purchase property in our community rather than that property going to other people. So in actuality, that's a plan to save our communities. But I just say it's important for us to be patient with our people, but it's also important for us to be more creative and learn better how we could teach and share this information with the majority of, with the masses of our people.
Hey, Doc, one of the things I was trying to, and, you know, that's why I'm so proud of our show. We talk about Dr. King all the time on this show. We talk about Malcolm, Marcus, Harriet Tubman, Queen,
yes,
Nefertiti,
sir.
On and on. But one of the things I try to stress to our people, Dr. King's last speech on that April 3rd at the temple in Memphis, that was an extraordinary speech. The white man had crafted that 47-minute speech into less than 3 minutes. I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't fear no man.
Right. Exactly.
But when you break that speech down, King got down on economics. He said we got to stop buying Wonder Bread, stop buying Coke. He said a man can't ride
right.
your back unless it's bent. And he went on to say, yeah, I like when we get to heaven, we're going to wear white robes, but we need some shoes and some suits and some dresses here on earth. He said, I'm a preacher. I like New Jerusalem. I like preaching like that. He said, but we need a new Memphis, a new Atlanta, a new New York. He was really radical in that last speech. He was really upset, and everybody say they seen a difference in him. And I'm just wondering, how are we going to get more of our people to go into African studies and African study programs like yours so we can become the teachers we need with the and we know the hours and tons of hours it takes to get those degrees and the research, but we need armies of young people coming to your college campus, coming to your facility and getting into African studies, or we're just not going to win. This is what the Jews, the Chinese, and some of the people we get angry at, but what they do, they never forget their culture, and they never stop teaching who they are.
Well, two things is, number one, I think we have to start before they even get to college. As you mentioned, you know, Jewish folk, they don't do that, right? They raise their youth up from the, really from the cradle. And so, as you know, my family is involved in creating the Quilombo Academic and Cultural Institute. That's an African-centered school right in Decatur, Georgia. Ages from K through eighth grade, and then you got people like the Aya Institute who are teaching our students on a high school level. We also, for people who can't put their kids in a school because there's a cost for somebody from programs like Aya and Quilombo, we have the New African Scouts, which is a weekend program, meets on every Friday night over at Hillside Presbyterian Church. So we got to begin to start teaching our youth early on because, you know, by the time we get them in college, you know, we can make a whole lot more impact if they already come with a knowledge of who the Honorable Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Queen Mother Moore, Ida B. Wells, if they already knew these people, these heroes and sheroes, and they knew. Like I have one sister who's in our program, who graduated with a master's in our program. Her family was in the Nation of Islam, and she's studying the economic program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And so I'm really proud of that because here this sister who's already given certain knowledge from her family, she's able to get with a lot of the old pioneers, and then young people could read that about that economic program, and they could begin to take it to the next level, right? And so that's what we need. We need to start grooming our young people from the cradle, you know, and you know, these other people you've talked about the from the cradle to the prison pipeline, right? And we got to create the cradle to the nation pipeline. You know, we got to create some nation builders and build them with some consciousness, with some skills and some know-how, as well as we got to teach our young people entrepreneurship because we know these people out here are not trying to employ our youth, right? The place they want to employ them is the penitentiary. And so we got to begin to pool our resources and teach our young people how to pool their resources to create our own enterprises, our own economic development, our own communities.
Now, I would be kicking myself all over the place if I didn't go in there. I know we got to let you go get some sleep for you can fight that traffic and fight those young people tomorrow, but I have to hold you on to ask you this because in running the New Black Panther Party and doing what we do, we have to walk a fine line, not because of the white man, not because of the enemy, because the soft heart and the soft nature of our own people feel that Dr. Khaled Muhammad and the Malik Zulushibaz and yourself sometime and Mawala and our group, we're just too hard. But I go back and tell them all the time when you go into the thorough research, the brother you mentioned earlier, the Deacons for Defense and the churches organized first to protect from them Klan burning their churches. And when you get the Black Wall Street, them deacons and them preachers went in that basement of that church and surrounded that jail and demanded the release of that young man that caused the ruckus in Black Wall Street. But that leads me into tell us about the book that you put out this summer and what made you write it and how we can go get it, because we always in the African nature, here in America, we always hear about the black man running, getting shot in the back, the black man getting lynched, the black man woman getting taken from him, the black man kids getting sold. But there was a lot of black men on them plantations who was a man and broke them crackers' necks. There was a lot of black men on them plantations who took that rope and lynched some of them slave owners. There was a lot of black men who shot back. So tell us about your book, Professor, before we let you go.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that, Sham. The book, is, as you mentioned, is called We Will Shoot Back: Armed Resistance in the Mississippi Freedom Movement. What made me write it was when I was a young man, I grew up in Compton, California, and we used to think, you know, from what we saw on TV about the civil rights movement in the South, a lot of youngsters, we felt that the movement down here was soft, and we couldn't understand why people were involved in nonviolent resistance and getting, you know, allowing people to spit on them and, you know, things of that nature. Now, let me say this. I know better. I know that the people who were involved in nonviolent were very brave, and they had a lot of heart. But at the same time, when I was a youngster, I couldn't identify with that. So it really tripped me out when I became active in the movement, and then I used to come to the South, and then I met people who were soldiers. I met this sister, Dar Obubakari. Her name was also Virginia Collins. Her birth name was Collins. She was her parents were Garveyites. But I rode with her and her son from Atlanta to New Orleans in 1976, and they told me about our elders and ancestors bearing guns out in the country in case they needed them to fight back against the white supremacists. They also told me that doing some of the nonviolent demonstrations, some of them would be on the sidelines protecting the people who were nonviolent. I never heard that before. Then I actually came to Mississippi in the 70s, and I met a brother named Alfred Skip Robinson, who actually had gun battles with the Klan, and they were able to run the Klan out of town in northern Mississippi. And so knowing these stories, hearing these stories, I began to want to study it more, document it more, but also wanted to kind of give it to young people to let them know that our people did fight back. You know, there was one time you mentioned I'm a professor at Georgia State. We had a gathering of Caribbean students from Africa and students from the United States. And we tried to bring them together and have stronger dialogue. And one of the Caribbean brothers and sisters said, well, the difference between us and the black people in the United States is our people fought back and yours didn't. And then the bad thing about it wasn't that he said it. The bad thing was that black students could not stand up for themselves and said, no, this is what my ancestors did. You know, they didn't even point to a Nat Turner, a Denmark Vesey, a Gabriel Prosser, a Charles Deslong, who led the largest slave revolt ever in New Orleans. You know, they couldn't talk about those type of things, right? And so I wanted to write a book that would contribute to our understanding of how we resisted and fought back. And so that's what motivated the book. That's what made me write it. I have a Facebook page, We Will Shoot Back, Armed Resistance in Mississippi Movement. And so, student, if you want to find out about the book or get information on how you could obtain it, go to We Will Shoot Back on my Facebook page, or go to akumoja.com, and you can see my web page. AK Umoja, that's U, M as in Mary, OJA.com. And you can send me an email or send me some information, and we could tell you how to obtain the book. It's with New York University Press. So at the end, of, it's being sold for half price right now if you go online with them and get that information from them. But just contact me. There's ways you can contact me on my website and on my Facebook page. I have a personal Facebook page, but go to the We Will Shoot Back page on Facebook, and you can get that information from.
Last question, and you can get you some sleep. Do you think the same tactics, Professor, that they used to keep Malcolm and Martin only meeting once for that brief time when in 1963 in Washington, right before King did his I Have a Dream speech, and that photo that everybody see him, and then once Malcolm came south to speak with him, they arrested King to keep him away from him. Now we got like Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Mr. Louis Farrakhan, and we got the other side, which is the Malik Zulu Shabazz and our crews that we can keep naming. And it seemed like the same tactics are working to keep us from working together. What do you feel we need to do different, that since we know more than Malcolm and Martin knew now, both of them died at 39, and we are privileged to have professors and well-studied what this country do to divide us. What do you see from sitting at Georgia State, watching the young people come in and ask you the questions? What do you feel about the Black Power movement and people understanding that nationalism and revolution is part of China, Japan, part of Africa, part of Europe, part of the British and everybody else? And when we do it and say it, they make us seem like we so out of touch with reality.
Well, as in terms of, yeah, that's true. They do make it seem that. And it's, even on the university, it's really like that. In terms of most scholars today would denounce Black nationalism and not see it as a viable force. It's only a few of us, a minority of us, who speak about it in a way that brings an honor to a Marcus Garvey, a Elijah Muhammad, a Malcolm X, or a Queen Mother Moore. You know, so that's a problem. But I think when I see us in Atlanta, I was proud the other day when the press conference was called by the Davis Bozeman Law Firm, and you had ministers who were from the, you know, civil rights movement, really, and you had some of us who were Black nationalists and Pan-Africanists, and otherwise we all stood together in a united front. And maybe from here from Atlanta we can be that example of how we can stand together as one for unity. You brought Brother Mikasa on early, and he's going to come on later. He worked with the great Kwame Ture, and Kwame Ture was, one of his mantras was to bring together an African united front. And that was something that ever, you know, he had worked on for, you know, like 20 years to try to bring together African people, no matter who they were. He said every Negro was a potential Black man. That's what he said. And so it's necessary for us to try to bring that together. And, you know, he tried to bring together some of the civil rights and politicians to sit down with Minister Farrakhan. But, you know, some of them had their orders that they couldn't be in the same room with Minister Farrakhan. But I think we just should unite the people who need to be united. And once we do that, the others will maybe come through shame. I'm reminded of, even though it's kind of different, and even though I'm critical of President Obama, and I don't think President Obama is our savior, but it was interesting to me when the masses of our people voted for Obama that John Lewis was forced to leave the Hillary Clinton camp and support Obama. And maybe if we can unite ourselves together and we can educate and organize enough people, that'll bring the rest of them by shame. So I think that's what we have to do. And I like what we're doing here in Atlanta to bring about unity. That's how you and I came together around this. You know, that's how we developed our relationship, is in the midst of the struggle. So I think as more and more of us come together like that and show our people, really the things we talk about are really the only solution anyway. Ain't nobody trying to protect us. We've seen that from the Trayvon Martin situation and other situations where youth are being shot down in the street. And nobody's trying to hire our youth, you know. So we got to come together, and we have to develop a viable program and take it from talking about it to a viable program. And our people will respond once they see that viable program.
Well, brother, we want to say we appreciate you for this late hour. And I have to go back and say that the unity that I've learned and that I continue, I learned it from the Honorable Dr. Khaled Muhammad. When I met Dr. Khaled Muhammad, he would take me to the house of Creflo Dollar. And the next week we'll be in L.A. going to Johnny Cochran house. The next week we'll be sitting with Brother Silas Muhammad. The next week we'll be looking for Dr. Malachi York. Next week we'll be in New York with Queen Mother Moore and John Henry Clark, and the next week he'll have me at Howard University trying to track down a young college student named Malik Zulu Shabazz. And the next call I get, he say, we got to go to L.A. and we got to find, we got to go to Oakland and find Huey P. Newton. I'm hearing some things, and we need to go get to this brother. So we know it take all of us to win this battle, and we're going to stay on the revolutionary front, and we're not going to compromise, but we're going to tell our brothers and sisters, don't just call us in the dark hour. Let us wake up in the daylight, too. We appreciate you, Professor, and we're going to try to get as many students over there under your leadership as we can, and hopefully we can have you back on later in the year and get an update on what's going on.
All right. I'd love to, and thanks for everything. Thanks for everything you do in terms of staying consistent and keeping the name of our brother Khalid Muhammad alive and strong.
Yes, sir. I owe him that. And
one of our most powerful spokespersons.
Yes, sir. I really appreciate that. And he's on with us now, as you know.
Yes, sir.
All right. We're going to go back to the producer. Brother Sean, your last words to the professor.
Yes, indeed, Brother Professor. You know we love you and appreciate you. Keep the fire burning. Anytime that you want to come to this radio broadcast, you know this is home to you, sir.
Thanks a lot. And I also want to say, Brother Hashim, on your Facebook page, you probably had it already, but I posted the link to that Memphis Commercial Appeal article I mentioned earlier about Army Intelligence and Dr. King.
Oh, yeah, I got that, too.
All right, very good. Y'all keep up the good work. Stay strong, Black Power, and Free the Land.
Black Power. Free the land. Thank you so much.
Okay.
That's powerful. All right. Brother Mukasey, you here with us?
Yes, sir.
All right. Black Power. Brother, buckle your safety belt. You heard him in the last segment of the show, and he's back to finish. And he's interested in taking your questions as well. You heard how far he was getting into what really happened with Dr. Martin Luther King, his family, and that whole history. This is a man that has literally walked with Martin Luther King Jr., Kwame Ture, and so many greats. He's a walking historian, a walking living legend himself. We want to welcome you back, Brother Mukasa Rickstadter. Welcome back. And we got to start you off with this. The National Chairman, Ms. Hashim Nzinga, he was talking to me during the break, and he was telling a story about you having to wear Dr. Martin Luther King's clothes, you know. And tell us about this situation. You were so close that you were wearing his clothes. What was going on?
Well, we weren't just buddy like that, but we were friends and comrades, and we were always nice to each other. He was always extremely nice to me. And that we marched, demonstrated, protested, disagreed, agreed, and I had the opportunity of, in the movement, taking Dr. King to school. I did a lot of work and pressure on him with Black Power, the anti-war movement. And basically, I just did a lot of work with him. But I was one of the soldiers. And one day, Martin just said to me, he called me Willie back then, say, if you need some clothes. I got plenty, because he saw I didn't have no plenty of clothes. I basically used to wear overalls all the time. But I had, different times. But he just said, if you need some clothes, come by the house and get some. I got plenty of them. People give them to me. And so one day I needed some clothes. I was going somewhere. So on several occasions, I just go by the house and say, Martin, I need some clothes. Go back in his room and take a little shower quick and get some clothes and move on. So he was just a good friend. I ate dinner, lunch with him, and even ate dinner at his different family reunions. He'd invite me to come to his family reunion, sit down with him, or I'd go by his office. And whenever he was doing anything, he would stop, don't care who he was talking to, and come out of his office, allow me to come in and invite me in, and we talk and whatever. But he was just a soldier. And Martin was a very, very nice, humble brother. He was always a pretty nice guy, always.
That's for sure. That's good history. Let's go to the phone lines real quick here. Area code 216-932. 216-932. You're on live Black Power Radio with the Mukasa Rickstadter. Let's go. Ask your question, your comment. Welcome, Black Power.
Yes, Black Power, brother. How you doing, Brother Sean?
Black Power doing
Minister
good.
Minister Najee Muhammad, Master Commander, New Black
Nation. Oh, Najee Muhammad, Brother Africa.
Hey, soldier, how you doing? Professor
Africa.
West has hit me and said it was on the show. You was on there. And I stopped what I was doing and called in.
Well, thank you, Brother Africa.
Yes, how y'all doing? Y'all know what's going on in Cleveland with the National Black Power tribute to two great men, Dr. Khaled Du Muhammad and Martin Luther King Jr., February 8th at the Library Auditorium, 11900 St. Clair Avenue. The Year of Power, Erase the Fear.
All right.
Black Power family.
That's good, brother.
Yes, sir. You're welcome to come.
Well, thank you.
Brother, got a question for Brother Mukasa?
Gone. Thank you, Najee.
I'm right here.
Brother Najee.
Yes,
Black
sir.
Black Power.
Black Power.
How you doing, soldier?
Holding the line, maintaining this course.
Man, I
Django
truly
unchained.
Understand it. I truly understand it. I was thinking when me, you, Mikasa, and we riding to Katrina to deal with those crackers, got Brother Najee Muhammad on Black Power Radio. Brother, you say you got an event for Dr. Khaled and Dr. King February 8th. Say where it's going to be again.
Right here in Cleveland, Ohio, Glenview Branch Library Auditorium, going down.
Do you know the address of Glenview Library?
11900 St. Clair Avenue.
And if somebody wanted to call you, how could they get in touch with you?
216-932 3814 NASA Command Center Hotline. Also, they could call 214-245-9218. This is the NASA Commander, Brother Drew in Dallas, Texas.
Well, you know, we got if we got Brother Najee Muhammad and Mikasa Rick on, it's some people with them three-letter words show up tonight. Brother Najee, how's everything been going out there in Cleveland?
Fine. We got this big mini mansion, national compound. I got,
you know, you're going to keep that.
Moving in, similar with Khaled Muhammad set up in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
But this one, we got this one off the ground. And we moving on with this Hashim Bey and people from Syracuse and some other people moving here. And we rolling. We're about to get the next other side done, the plumbing. This side is done. Glass, wooden floors, re-rolling.
Well, I want to do this one.
I want to
do this one more. I want to do this one more time. Get a phone number again. 216.
Number is 216-932-3814, National Hotline. And also 214-245-9218.
Man, it's just
bad.
Command
post.
You know, we can't do enough tributes to Dr. Khaled and to Dr. King. And anytime anybody, especially a soldier that soldiered with him, is doing a tribute, we're going to push it as much as we can, because so many young people, Najee, as you know, didn't get a chance to experience Dr. Khaled like we did. And every time somebody says his name, his spirit jump into us and make us move out. And we appreciate you, brother, for continuing. No matter what, we all on the same battlefield against this same enemy. And this enemy is getting deeper and deeper. And we losing more and more young people to this system and this
right.
this systematic taking them from us with these Facebooks and these reality shows. And ain't no more reality in the shows because they're taking out revolutionary
right.
and putting us out on the island. So, brother, you keep fighting. Whatever we can do to help,
yeah,
you always can let us know.
Fred Hampton Jr. will be here. He called me the other night. The National Defense called me the other night. Israel.
That's a blessing.
Abdul Kahar will be here. We're launching the National Power Economic Sound Plan to help fight against poverty in Cleveland and the times.
And I know Cleveland needs it. We're going to go back to our phone lines,
yes,
and I guess Mikasa, we got to get you on the show one day before February 8th. I'll call you. That's why I took this number twice. I'll
okay.
call you, and we'll get together.
All right.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Brother Sean.
All right. Black Power. All right. Let's go to the next caller here. Your area code is 562-239. 562-239. You're on live Black Power Radio. our guest, Brother Mukasa Richard Dowdy. Go ahead, your question, your comment. We're looking to hear from you, Black Power. Welcome.
Yeah, Brother Sean, Brother National Spokesman, Brother National Chief of Staff.
Hey, Black Power, my brother.
And my brother, Brother Ali, out here on the West Coast. And give greetings to our National Chairman, Brother Hashim and Zinga. Brother, love you too, Black man. Good to speak with you.
Yes,
are we
sir.
Still on?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes, sir.
Brother Ali, we hear nothing but good
Black
stuff
Power.
About you out there in L.A., brother, and we appreciate all the work you're doing, and we're so fortunate. Brother Mukasa, tell Brother Ali how old you are, because everybody's still thinking you're about 36 or between 36 and 37.
No, I'm never 35.
I told him them dates were wrong.
Yes, sir.
Two-time 35.
Brother Mukasa is 70 years old and will put on his boots right now, Brother Ali. And I told him I was coming to L.A. and you had a problem, he'll ride all the way with me. He won't drive, but he'll ride.
Yes,
well,
sir.
I ain't driving that far. 3 days. Hell no.
Yes, sir. Brother, but I just wanted to say this, brother. I appreciate you, brother, letting me on and to speak with your brother. And I just want to thank brother for his sacrifice, for fighting for our rights, brother, fighting for us as Black people, brother, you know, and like they said, you know, it was all about Black liberation, liberating our people. But I wanted to say this also, Brother National Chief of Staff, and Brother Hashim and Zinga, brother, the college celebration went well here in Los Angeles, and I was at the Church of Carras, our meeting place, and brother, coming from the nation, I've heard stories about our dear Brother Khalid Muhammad, brother, but that night, brothers came up and spoke, brother. I heard some things, brother, that would literally bring tears to your eyes, brother, about how generous this brother was and how sincere he really was. And it was a very awesome night. And at the end of the night, Brother Sean, you know, they made me get up and do a song. And I couldn't think of a song to do, and the ancestors bought me Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley. So I did that in the name of Dr. Khalid Muhammad, brother. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. And we put the funk down, too, baby.
It's a beautiful day.
Good thing.
Yes, sir. But National Chief of Staff, National Chairman, brother, thank you both for having me on. And have a healthy Black Power, brother. I'm just a little exhausted right now, but just a Black Power, brother.
Are you there?
So you got any questions for Brother Mukasa? You talking to a living legend on the farm, man that walked with many great giants and has a story of his own to tell. I better ask you a question while you got a second, brother.
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask something about Brother Stokely Carmichael, Brother Kwame Ture.
I raised that fella.
Say it again?
I raised him.
Was that brother always on, brother? They say he was always ready for a fight. Is that true or false?
I can't say if he was always ready or not. I just know he fought a whole bunch of them.
Yes, sir, brother.
I fought him with him. I was right there swaying with him. He said swing, I swing. Now, yeah,
yes, sir.
He was a good brother. He worked very hard for Africa. He worked very hard for Black Power. We worked very hard in the Civil Rights Movement. And he believed in Pan-Africanism. That's what he died for.
Yes, sir. And they said he was an avid reader. He said he read 24 hours a day, brother. He was always.
I don't know if he read 24 hours a day, but he could read a book. He read many, many books. He read everybody. Any book that came before him, he was willing to read it.
Thank
He's
you, dear
well
father.
Read.
Thank
huh?
you, dear elder. Thank you, dear
well, thank
elder.
You, thank
African
you, African brother. And please organize our people. We got to organize. We got to do less discussion about it. And we got to go to the people more, and we got to become part of the people and be the person that the brothers out there in the streets and gangs that they refer to. We got to let them refer to us, refer to Black Power, refer to the Unity of Africa. And we're the ones we want them to look to and not the people that Marcus Garvey called white black people.
That's right. Well, brother, I just left an old Panther meeting right now. We're organizing heavy out here, brother. When you get to L.A., brother, please get my number from brother at National Chief of Staff, and
okay,
we're going to check you out for a good
time. Okay, I was out there in L.A. at what's his name, who got the Arts Center?
We got the Art Center.
The old black family with the Art Center?
Oh, you mean Arkansania?
Yeah, and Arkansania plays all the Panthers that I spoke to, as a matter of fact. They
yeah,
have
that's where I was. I was with Arkansania
so.
Right now.
Huh?
I was just with him. Him and his wife, Arkansania.
Well, him and his wife are my better friends. We are soldiers together. I was just at his place about a month ago.
Well, brother, when you back, call me so we can get you out. Take you out for a good
well,
time.
Well, Arkansas is a real, real soldier and a very dedicated man, and he has definitely given his life to the development of African people. He
yes,
and his
sir.
Wife.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother.
Black Power.
Black Power.
All right, Black Power. Take another call here. Area code is 405-468. 405-468. You're on live. This is Black Power Radio. You're talking to Brother Mukasa, Rick, Dada, and we're talking about did the FBI really kill Martin Luther King Jr.? Go ahead with your question, your comment, Black Power.
Hey, how y'all doing there?
Hey, Brother Africa, how you doing, sir?
Oh, this is Brother Michael Washington. Brother, how's everybody?
We all struggling, brother.
Good. Yes, we are, brother. Again, I'm from Oklahoma City, and I just want to thank you for this opportunity to speak. You are truly speaking to a real black revolutionary. First of all, let me say it like this here without any biting my tongue. I know that the FBI as well as black bourgeoisies all got together and said not only have they killed Martin Luther King, but they also killed my brother Malcolm X and my brother Khalid Muhammad at the same time. You want to know why? Because those were the brothers who stood up and fought for the civil rights, real civil rights of black folks who were here in the Western Hemisphere, who were trampled on all their rights, who had their religion stolen from them, their God, their language, their culture, their land, our women, our children, and all from us. So let me say, my brothers, again, without biting my tongue, this is truly a great thing for me to be able to sit, to talk to you today because I'm one of my people. Let me tell you something. I run an organization in Oklahoma, and these white folks in Uncle Tom's down there hate me. I'm just going to try to tell you because let me tell you something. One of my mentors was Brother Malcolm X. I don't care what they say about the brother. He's very, very true to me. And let me tell you like this here. Again, if I don't let me speak, if you cut me off if you need to, but I've got to say this right quick. Because I don't get my voice heard around in Oklahoma. Why? Because I am about my people, just like a Trayvon Martin and things like that, my brother. I'm one of the only groups around with no other group, so-called black groups in Oklahoma, this sidewinding backwood redneck state. They don't want to talk about actually talk. I don't talk. I walk. My motto and my organization is change your world and your world will change around you. I took about 17 of us, went to the state capitol from 23rd Street on Martin Luther King, and we went down and said, look here, y'all going to change the law for us blacks here in Oklahoma. If you're not, you're going to hear from us. And it ain't going to be about what you want to hear. You're going to hear from realness because, like I said, I'll die by the ballot or the bullet, meaning that I'm going to get mine. So I'm trying to tell you that I appreciate you for letting me say this because now at least I got an audience of people and I'm not by myself because I definitely feel alone down in Oklahoma. Just put it
well,
like
you
I'm a real
organization, brother. You can't be by yourself and you can't defeat imperialism by yourself. And you can't
that's
fight
right.
Just fight race the system by yourself. You need
right.
An organization. So you need to
that's
not be one person, but you need an organization. If it ain't but 5, 10, 15 of you, start sitting down together and you'll be much stronger and your voice and your influence and your deeds will be much greater than the individual talking.
We're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to do, but it's so scary down in Oklahoma, my brother.
Everybody
that's what I'm trying to tell you.
Oklahoma, I've been out there. Sure. Got some warriors in Oklahoma. They
well,
all
I mean,
over Oklahoma. We just got to go to them with the right ideals and the right thoughts. But don't think that you're the only one out there that believe in revolution. The masses believe in revolution. They just need us to go to them in the right way and doing it. Matter of fact, if we out there talking to people about Africa, about anything, about the movement or struggle in any way, if they ain't listening to it, then we ain't got nobody but ourselves. We maybe need to look at ourselves and see that we need another approach or another philosophy or another behavior or some kind of organization because it ain't the people. The people are good.
Brother Michael, let me say this. This is Brother Hashim. I'm going to get our National Chief of Staff, which just recorded your phone number, to give you a call back because what I want to do is bring you back on and talk about change your world, and I think you said in the world will change you, and I want to talk about what you're doing in Oklahoma and give you some time on the show to talk about what you're trying to get done out there. Cause,
come on.
That'd be great.
So first of all, my name used to be Steve Washington. I got about 12 cousins named Michael Washington, and I'm from Texas. So
I know what you're going through out there, and I might, after we bring you on the show and find out what's going on, me and Mikasa might have to head your way. So we appreciate
Come
you,
on.
Brother. You're not by yourself. But tonight we're going with this Martin Luther King show, and when you say Malcolm and Khaled, when you say Malcolm, Khaled, and Martin, you got our attention, but we want to bring you back on. We don't want to just act like you got lucky to get on this show, Black Power Radio,
right.
for people like you to talk about your organization in detail,
yeah, right.
what you're trying to get done, and then us to organize to help you. We got troops in your area.
Yeah,
and,
we know other people in Oklahoma.
And we're not going to blow your call off. So, Brother Sean,
yeah.
make sure you get that call, that number, if we can get Brother back with Brother Michael, Brother Sean. And,
Thank you, Brother Michael.
Brother.
Long live the revolution.
Yeah.
And remember, you're not by yourself.
Hey, well, I tell you what, let me say this. It ain't going to be no quitting. Like I say, it'll be the ballot or the bullet, man. I'm going to the graveyard with it. Okay,
let's
thank you,
get organized. Build a strong organization like Marcus Garvey did.
Okay, I'm trying my best, brother. Like I said, I got proof of mine. I'm not just talking mine. I got proof I was the only one. That's what I'm trying to say.
We don't want you to be the only one. We want you to be many.
Yeah. Okay.
Black
I do.
Power.
All right, thank y'all. Now.
All right, thank you, Brother Sean. Right.
Thank you, Brother Michael. Let's go to the next call here. Area code is 202-735. 202-735. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Brother Mukasa Rick Dada talking about, did the FBI really kill Martin Luther King Jr.? Was it really James Earl Ray? Talk to us, Black Power. Your question, your comment. Welcome.
I do believe. My name is Dr. Millier. Happy to be here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Happy to be here. Happy to hear you all on the battlefield and whatnot. Took out some time from professional work just to hear some brothers and sisters that are in tune with progress and reality among the Black family. And, of course, I believe it was FBI that tried to assassinate Martin Luther King Jr. There are a lot of reasons why, and a lot of writings to answer that as well, such as William Pepper's book, who was the lawyer that handled the case concerning Martin Luther King Jr. Also, his wife was very adamant that she didn't believe that James Earl Ray was guilty. And they went to visit him inside of the prison and was very supportive as visitors to him and whatnot. So it tells us that we have a matrix in many senses that is going on. There are things that are happening on the scene, and there are things that are happening behind the scene. And we get so caught up with what's happening in front of us that we don't see what's moving behind us. Definitely. It's a growing thing. I think the answer to that question is, the answers for us individually, it's a growing thing for us to understand that, to know, and to get busy because we know, to work with and to be able to support one another because of that. Once we see the truth, be able to fit in wherever we are and understand that the best leaders or followers and whoever's leading, we be willing to get behind a campaign to help them to work hard toward the purpose. And I believe Martin King's assassination was connected. One of the books that I read about him concerning community and chaos, community or chaos, was attached to a lot of things, a lot of innuendos about the relationship that he and Malcolm X had developed in many instances. And so Here it is. There are a lot of reasons to take him out. The Martin Luther King that we see in 1965 is not the one that we see in 1963. He had evolved to Black nationalism in 1967 in Chicago. Here's a man that's preaching more nationalism in 1968. The speech that they don't relay the entire speech. He was actually speaking nationalism, talking about moving our money to the Black banks, taking our money out of their society. I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the name of the new campaign to remarch to Washington in 1968 was called Resurrection City. And I think he himself had grown to see and to understand and may have always known, because I think there were many levels to Martin King, like an onion, but he was becoming very much open in this aspect that we've got to do it together as Black people. And I believe that was, the evolution. he made the evolution to strong nationalism. That's very adamant. The 1967 Chicago campaign, where he reinvites Stokely Carmichael, who at that point was an avid black nationalist, even marching through the SCLC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He was an advocate as well, leaning toward black nationalism. But he makes that crossover, and King calls him back. And he's working strong with a lot of black nationalists. I think that Malcolm X had a lot to do with that, the maturity of his eye. And of course, we understand that King supported, was helped support his family, too, during difficult times with his assassination, or close there, too. Definitely, I think they did. I think it's a wonderful show, wonderful subject. Glad to be in a part of it. I'm a hustler. I know there's other people that's ready to say something.
Thank you, brother.
How you brother,
thank you for
how
your
you
comment.
How you brothers doing? All right.
Four.
All right, we still here, Brother Mukasa. You want to respond to that?
No, I think he said all I'm saying is that the FBI killed Martin Luther King. Not did they kill him. They killed him. They killed Malcolm. They did everything to destroy Marcus Garvey, and they killed all our leaders that rise up and try to unite us or do something for us or pull us together. The United States has systematically assassinated them, murdered them, undermined them, or what they call neutralized them. Yes, sir.
And then, as you know, Brother Sean, for some of the young people that might be still on Facebook and listening, they got to truly understand that this is not hocus pocus. This is not hatred. This is just history, like they call it. And when you talk about how the FBI began and J. Edgar Hoover, period, J. Edgar Hoover's first assignment was on the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. He was not the FBI director at that time. He won this nation over by using different blacks and using different people in this nation to destroy Marcus Garvey and to have him deported and to bring the fake charges against him. And he was the one who was the agent in charge that gave Marcus Garvey his last charge and got him into Atlanta Penitentiary and on to New Orleans and shipped out of this country and stopped one of the most powerful movements ever in American history. And he went on after that to be rewarded with this new group called the FBI. And they went on to make movies in Hollywood about him, Elliot Ness and all of that, and build him up. And that's all they was mass murderers, liars, and would bug everybody phones, every president of the United States, and every black from Jackie Robinson to Malcolm X to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, on and on, and use everything against our people. And now you see coming out now FBI tapes and FBI recordings where they was totally a group of gangsters and totally illegal. And now it's coming out in books. It's coming out all over the world. So I'm proud to be on the phone tonight to defend Dr. King and what Dr. King was up against, just to be righteous and just to take young people like Mukasa and give them a chance to be at a water fountain or eat a hamburger, sitting like a man at a counter, and to get to vote and civil rights and what we were going through with the scopes always pointed at our head, wondering when the trigger was going to be pulled by our illegal system that made us worship them, made us put on United States uniforms and jump out of planes and attack and kill other people like Elijah Muhammad taught Malcolm. I'm not going to kill somebody who ain't never called me no nigga. And then get mad when you wake up and understand you're fighting for a freedom you don't have, because when you come back to these United States in that suit and you wear them stars and stripes, they put the same rope around your neck that they put around us in the cotton fields and tobacco fields of America. Doris Miller shot down Japanese planes at Pearl Harbor, got every award you can get out of Waco, Texas. And then as soon as they sent them out on the United States ship called Arizona, them white crackers threw him overboard and killed him, and he was a hero for this nation. So this nation is a hypocritical nation. They have to face themselves, and with Google and this new generation, the truth is going to come out that we've been a used people in this nation, and we're waking up and we're demanding respect and we're demanding our part of the universe and the globe, not just America. And once we become global thinkers and stop thinking from across the tracks and stop thinking from the outhouse and start thinking international like everybody else and move with a global perspective, we're a danger to this United States, because we're a danger because the United States, see clearly, is losing its slaves. Brother Sean, do we got another call? If not, I want to ask Mikasa a question.
Yes, sir. We got another call.
No. Take the caller.
All right. Call the other call is 503-839. 503-839. This is Black Power Radio. We're talking to Mikasa Riggs. Did the FBI really kill Martin Luther King? Your thoughts? Go ahead and ask a question, I guess. Black Power.
Hello?
Hello. How you doing,
Hello?
Brother? Hello?
Hello?
Right, you got a question? You got a question for our guest?
Oh, I just had a statement.
All right, what's your statement?
It's about Elijah Muhammad.
What about him?
Oh, I was just going to say that Elijah Muhammad said that black, brown, red, and yellow are the majority of the world's population. And Elijah Muhammad, based off of Elijah Muhammad's sex, I listened to his videos. There's certain regions of the world that, based off certain information from different scholars of study, would say are would go with that. Even places in Europe that people didn't really know about, like Central Europe and Southern Europe. Some people didn't really know about that, that were outside.
Talking about the Moors when they conquered Southern Europe?
I'm talking about brown Africans. Africans from Iran and Africans from the Middle East. They're called Alpines or brown. They're also Mediterranean race, and they're considered Africans or Asiatic Africans of a brownish skin color. And they majority of Central Europe and Southern Europe. And they're
okay, yeah, we all over the world. I have no problem with that.
What'd you say?
Let me ask you this, caller. Where are you calling from, and what's your nationality?
I'm African American, and I'm from USA.
You're African. All black people are Africans, young man. So even if you were born in America, you're still an African, and you're from Africa. And the only somebody here are the native people, what we call the Indians or the Aztecs or whatever we call them. But the white man is a European, and the people that they brought from Africa with the African descent came on slave ships, and they are Africans, so we are Africans. We're never Americans, and we never come from here. We always come from Africa.
But what about the North Africans, like the Egyptians, Libyans, Algerians, Moroccans, Tunisians?
They're Africans.
They're
all Africa, the whole continent. Everybody that come out of that continent is Africans, and some people came to the continent, like the Arabs and the Europeans and some of the Indians from India. The Indians from India, they still Indians, and the Arabs are still Arabs, and the white people are still Europeans, and the only Africans in Africans are the Africans, whether they call themselves Islamic or call themselves whatever. If they come, roots and ancestors come from Africa, and they look like me and you, they're Africans, and they belong to Africa, and they'll never be free until Africa is free.
Yeah, but before I go, I'll just say Elijah Muhammad with these scholars. Elijah Muhammad said, I just told you, you already know, but I'll list countries, some countries that he's talking about, and that's France, Northern Italy, Czech, some people in Central Europe, Bulgaria,
it's
Romania,
Africa,
Ukraine.
It's all them countries, but they came out of Africa. They didn't originate in Europe.
I also learned that that Russia has people called brown Africans, and they live in other indigenous to North Russia in Central Russia, and they also live in Finland. They're called Karelians, but the ones that miss the white folks, they're called Great Russians or Russians.
Okay, all I'm saying, we all over the world, and what we're saying, we need the philosophy of Pan-Africanism, what we all unite and fight for Africa. That's what I'm saying. Just like all them Islamic folks are uniting and fighting all over the world to push Islam and what have you, we need, as Africans, fight all over the world to defend Africa and to get all the foreign elements and all the negative elements out of Africa. And if we got African blood in us, don't care if we in China or Russia or wherever, we all need to unite under Pan-Africanism and under one philosophy, ideology, and all of us fight for the liberation and unification of Africa.
But the thing that you realize is,
like, hello, enough.
Thank you, Brother Africa.
Yes, sir. That's enough. Sometimes, Brother Mukasa, you know that devil sneak in too. So we don't want to keep this thing going, but we appreciate you. We appreciate you calling, sparking the conversation, and we appreciate you calling in, Brother Chairman. You got a question you want to ask Brother Mukasa Ricks?
Yeah, Brother Mukasa.
Yeah, Africa.
I remember when I was fortunate enough to be in the presence of Brother H. Ralph Brown, Kwame Ture. Brother H. Ralph Brown, Brother Jamil Amin, and Brother Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture. And I say both of their 60 names and their names that they made their growth periods because of where it's in this history piece about Dr. King in the 60s. But it was so unique for me to be young and fiery and bring them both to Dallas. And it was, they were so different. Brother Jamil Amin at that time, of course, has took on Islam, and he was so perfect as far as clean, neat, picky about what he eat. And Brother Stokely Carmichael was like in the hot tub at the hotel, and Brother Jamil Amin was trying to get him out, telling him about the filth in the water, even though they use Purex to clean it. You don't need to be in that water, brother. And when we go to eat, Brother Jamil Amin was so picky about what we were going to eat, and Brother Stokely Carmichael just was trying to, they was so different, but once you started the conversation of revolution, and once you started the conversation or mentioned Malcolm or mentioned the audience and the topic matter, they jumped on the same page so quick. They were like semi-twins. They were like born from the same mother. Did you get that same thing when you worked with both of them, that they were so much alike when it comes to attacking this enemy?
But when they were in SNCC, they had some similarities, but I saw a lot of difference in their methods and tactics and what have you. They operated very differently, but in SNCC they seemed to be very much, I worked with them, we owned Black Power and all that, but Kwame and Rap was, you know, had different tactics and operated differently, and Rap wanted to go to the battlefield and help throw firebombs and do whatever. But he was so tall, he stood out like a fire, and that's why he got shot in the head up there in Cambridge and what have you and whatever. But Rap, he became chairman of SNCC. He automatically was a target the day he became chairman, because he became chairman in the middle of the riots, rebellions, and the cities burning down and the Black Power movement. Rap became chairman in the middle of that, and so he stepped into a fire that ended up, it just kept burning and burning and burning him. So Rap really was never able to stand on his feet, because they put so many FBIs and threw so many cases at him and kept him winding up in the jails and prisons, and until he came out and he just got out and went to Islam and tried to, you know, go to use Islam as a way of getting himself together. But he was always under attack.
I know in working with both of them, that as you said earlier in the conversation, and all of this is circled around Dr. King, because you and Brother H. Ralph Brown was studying out there saying, if they don't come around, we'll burn them down. And Stokely was hollering Black Power. And as you were talking about Selma and the original way the Panther Party was started, as I do research, because now being chairman of the New Black Panther Party, and being a lover of Dr. Khalid Muhammad, you have to study, and you have to be a scholarly person to even mention these people's names. But as we study and want the truth to go out to the young nation that's going to come out after us, their break from Huey Newton and Bobby Seale and the original Panther Party, from all my research, was based on
break.
The Stokely Carmichael and H. Ralph Brown was based on basically them letting white people come into the party and having such prominent roles in the party.
SNCC and the Black Panther Party. And the Black Panther Party, most of them were trained and organized, and SNCC did all that for them and let them use our office, gave them some of our young people, and helped put them together. But Rap and Stokely never was really Black Panthers. We put our names on the Black Panther Party, and that automatically gave it a militant and an international flavor, and put a fire under it, because just the name Stokely Carmichael at that time and H.R.A.P. Brown and Jim Foreman name was honorary members, but they were always SNCC people, and that and we worked with them and we supported them, but then we had ideological difference down the road where we divided, and because some people wanted to bring in, we had SNCC had told white people to go organize white people. At one point, the Panthers started bringing in the Peace and Freedom and the Freedom and Peace Party that was packed with white people, and that one sector of the Black Panther Party was black nationalists, and another section of it was bringing in the white forces, and the people that was influenced by Kwame Ture and Black Power, then they when going for the integration part, they were more of the black nationalist kinds of groups, the ones on, I guess, the East Coast. But we all managed to work together and do different things and help burn down this country and bring confrontation of racism and imperialism. We made a great confrontation and made a great movement together against the wars in Vietnam and other wars that the United States was fighting.
Let me say this. In the producer's study hit me that we're coming into our last 5 minutes. When I was in the DeKalb County Jail, I was fortunate enough to read a book by Megger Everett's wife. And mm-hmm. I never knew so much about Megger Everett until after that book. But one of the things that shocked me was Megger Everett and the NAACP, because we're going to bring it back to Dr. King here in the end. Megger Everett was a revolutionary, and the elders in the NAACP was trying to keep him away from Dr. King and the Southern Christian leadership, and he fought hard to get to Dr. King. And then at that same time, SNCC was coming in with these young people doing the sit-ins and what you just described, and it seemed like the national field marshal for the NAACP was caught in the middle of wanting to be in the street with SNCC and wanting to be with the SCLC in the streets, and the NAACP at that time was kind of being, they didn't want to go to the streets, but Megger Everett bucked that all the way right up until he was assassinated.
Because SNCC had thousands of people in Mississippi in the streets, and they were burning down our churches, burned down 70-something churches in 64 alone, but we had thousands of people in the streets in Mississippi, Fannie Lou Hamer and all over Mississippi, and that most folks had no choice but to either be an Uncle Tom or be a militant. And Megger was trying to relate to that fire and that wind that was blowing through the state of Mississippi. And I think that by the time he was killed, he might have already been fired by the NAACP, and then they grabbed him back up and held him up after they killed him. They didn't tell people they had fired him. They hid that. But Megger was trying to relate to SNCC. SNCC was the leader of the whole entire civil rights movement. SNCC led Martin Luther King, led all of it at the point that it operated. SNCC was the most militant and the most organized organization, had the most projects, the most demonstrations, and the most people with marching, demonstrating at more different areas than at any given time. SNCC might have had 200-400 fronts operating at the same time. SNCC was carrying on a revolution in this country, and that it was way beyond what SCLC or Martin King then was doing, and that the only somebody was out doing SNCC in our history would be Marcus Garvey.
Well, I just like to say this to you, Brother Mikasa, and on that note with Meg Everett, you're exactly right, because in the book, what his wife did was she produced some letters from the NAACP leaders basically telling him that if you go to Georgia or you go to Alabama this week, and if you be with Dr. King, we're going to take his post, basically. And he was talking hard about some of the Toms in Mississippi that they was naming schools and streets after. He was going hard, and that's why I'm so proud that now in Mississippi, when you land at Jackson Airport, it's the Megger Everett Airport in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah, what they do is kill you and name an airport. They murder you to stop you from being who you are, and then they name an airport after you or name a street after you, like Martin Luther King Boulevard after the United States government killed him. And we want to straighten out just the topic of this discussion. The FBI definitely murdered Martin Luther King, and every leader. They definitely murdered Muammar Gaddafi, and they definitely coup d'etat the government of Kwame Nkrumah. They definitely murdered Lumumba in the Congo. They definitely murdered Steve Biko in South Africa, and they definitely shot down my man's airplane in Mozambique, the president of Mozambique,
that's right.
Smart Michelle, and they killing our people by the thousands all over the world. Anybody raise their head for freedom, this government has been assassinating them.
Well, one thing we got to say, Brother Mikasa, because you're on this phone tonight, and that means God is still on our side, and we're still talking, and we're still winning. And even though Mega Everett is on the brick at the airport, underneath his name is Mayor Chukwuma Lumumba, who's live, living, and still fighting in Jackson, Mississippi.
That's a good thing, and that we need to continue. We need to figure out how we take over the political, but we need to realize how we're going to take over the economic. Like in South Africa, they took over the political, but the white folks kept the diamonds, the gold, the oil, the silver, and the land, and all the guns, and the army, and what have you.
We need to figure out
how we're going to take over the economic.
And that's all the professor was talking about in the 30 minutes before you, as Dr. King was heading to economic development. And on that note, I'll turn it back over to my great producer.
We need a redistribution of the wealth, and that's socialism.
Brother Sean, we love you. It's on you. Brother Mikasa, we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Thank you, Black Power. Long live Pan-Africanism. Long live Africa. Long live socialism. Long live Fidel Castro.
All right, Black Power.
Brother Sean, how much time we got?
We got literally a minute left.
Well, I had my daughter done woke up. She wanted to say something about King, but I don't think we're going to have time.
She can try to get it in real quick.
Hurry over here. Okay, there's one of my little warriors who'll be listening to this show. Yeah. Hurry up.
My name is Akai Zinger. I want to tell you about Dr. King. He went to college. His college was Morehouse College. He said the best way to fight is love. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. He did not win it because he was nice. Actually, he won it because he was there to whites and blacks, and he broke rules. He never used weapons. He always used love. Thanks again. My name is Kai Zingahashi, his daughter.
All right,
African.
All right, that's the next generation. Now go to bed.
Hi, African, Black Power.
All right, Black Power, brothers and sisters, you've been listening to Brother Mikasa Rick Dada, Mr. Hashim Nzinga, National Chairman, New Black Panther Party. You've been listening to Brother Akin Yeti Umoja, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. Chair to mention Brother Mikasa Rick. I'm a slick organizer, Black Panther.
And let them know we're going to bring Brother Charles Steele back on when we went down from 10 to 10:30 was his frame. And he's in Germany doing international work for the SCLC. And he's been with us on many, many missions. And for whatever reason, Black Power Radio didn't let us come back on at 10. We'll get him back on and update us on how he's leading this organization. And so just hold your questions for him. We'll get him back.
That's right, brother. Charles Steele, the Honorable Charles Steele, SCLC. We'll be back on the radio with us. We just couldn't get him in through that 10 o'clock hour, and we do apologize to you all as our listeners, but we will have him back. He'll be back with us. He supports us. He's down. We hope that you enjoyed this show, and, of course, for those of you who are interested in supporting this movement and doing what Brother Mikasa Ricks talked about, which is joining the organization, of course, we ask that you just call these numbers. You call this number here. The error code is 347-903-0886, 347-903-0886, and the staff will get in touch with you and give you the information on how to register with our party and organize for black nationalism, black self-determination, stop black-on-black violence, and organize to rebuild our families. Our email, if you need us, our email is newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com. Again, that's newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com. I'm your host, Sean Saddam Kweli. Happy to bring this broadcast to you with our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga. We ask that you replay this tomorrow. Replay this and listen to this again, as this is historical, We want to say happy birthday to Martin Luther King Jr. Happy birthday to the great, great Dr. Leonard Jeffries, who had a birthday yesterday.
Oh,
and
God.
So black power to black people, all power to the people. And remember this, if black people are not free, if Africa is not free, there is nobody that's free. Black power.
Color with white minds on their jury that have no understanding of the average reasoning person of the black community. Point number 10. You ready for that one?
Yeah.
Point number 10. We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. How many for that? We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And as a political objective, we want national liberation in a separate state or territory of our own, here or elsewhere. How many want that? Some of y'all scared to raise your hand here. You scared he might ship us out to the east. You scared the Peckerwood might walk in here right now and say, all right, niggas. All you niggas sitting in there with all that African stuff on. Listen to that shiny ball-headed nigga up there. All right, nigga, just give me back everything in here belong to me, nigga. Everything. Give me my clothes, nigga. Here we are sitting in here looking at each other buck-naked. Sitting here buck-naked. Say, give me the shoes, nigga. We sitting in here buck-naked, barefoot, looking at each other. Give me the microphone, nigga. And the microphone jumps right out of my hand. Give me my tables, nigga. Give me my chairs, nigga. Now we all standing up, butt naked, barefoot. No microphone. Give me the lights, nigga. These are my lights. Here we all standing up, butt naked, barefooted. No mic, no chair, no table. In the dark. Is it all right, nigga? Give me the grease out of your hands, nigga. Here we are standing here. I lost the grease from our head. All right, nigga, give me my ditches. Are you sad? Are you sorry? Coming in here, yeah, you got your damn feet. He said, nigga, give me the building. Here we are now, standing up, butt naked, no shoes, no chair, no table, no mic, no light. The floor right out from under us, the building right out from behind us, and all around us, and here we are, outdoors, butt naked, in the dark. He said, all right, nigga, give me back, you talking all that talk. All right, buddy. Give me back, nigga. Give me back everything that belongs to me. Nigga, I've taken over Harlem. Nigga, get off the ground, nigga. Here we are, jumping up and down, outdoors, in the dark. But nigga, barefoot, no place to sit, no table, no light, no mic, no building, no floor. It's all right, nigga. You still, you crazy nigga. You dedicated nigga. You jumping up and down, buck naked and barefoot. I took the mic from you, nigga. I took everything from you, nigga. But you still listen to that nigga. All right, nigga. Give me my language back. Now the nigga standing up in front of you can't even talk to you no more. Here you are thinking, all right, nigga. You thinking in English. Give me back my thoughts out of your head. Here you are, blank-headed nigga. Can't listen no more. Buck naked, barefooted, in the dark, no building, no floor, no chair, no table, cold as hell. And the crackers say, all right, nigga, I got air right.
Stop breathing.
I got air right. You niggas can't breathe my ass. You niggas can't be in my ass space. Brothers and sisters, we need a separate state or territory of our own.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we can buy land,
yes,
and we must buy land,
yes,
so that we can practice nation building.
Yes, sir.
Buy land,
right,
so we can practice nation building. But when we buy land, understand that the deed that we have in our hand that we got from the white man, if you read in the fine print at the bottom, it says the United States government maintains the right of eminent domain, which means that the property costs $100,000. But you wanted to make sure you owned it. You gave the cracker $200,000 just to make sure you owned it. But it says at the bottom of the deed, the United States government maintains the right of eminent domain. So you pay all of them higher real estate taxes, and the white man come in, even though the property only, the land only cost $100,000, you pay $200,000 for it. The cracker can still take it, can he?
Yes,
can he still take it?
Yes.
What about the popular vote and the Electoral College vote? Did George Bush win the popular vote?
No, sir.
He did not. Who won the popular vote?
The people.
Gore, right?
Gore
won the popular vote. But even though Gore won the popular vote, Bush won the what? Electoral College vote. Hey, I'm not into that. You take your Electoral College. You take your goddamn popular vote. We in the New Black Panther Party believe that the vote should be a revolutionary weapon. That the vote should be a cock hammer. And we only use it on certain issues at certain times for certain candidates. But stop being a white man's nigga getting in line to vote every time there's a damn election. It should be a revolutionary
vote.
Take on the cock hammer principle. Let me read on. We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And as our political objective, we want national liberation in a separate state or territory of our own, here or elsewhere, a liberated zone, New Africa or Africa, and a plebiscite, a what?
A plebiscite.
A vote, a what?
A vote.
A plebiscite to be held throughout the black nation, in which only we will be allowed to participate for the purposes of determining our will and divine destiny as a people. Free the land, up you mighty nation, you can accomplish what you will, black power. We believe that the black man must focus on all of these 10 points and this program, this platform. And we close with these words. We believe that the white man has proven to be absolutely disagreeable to get along with in peace. How many disagree with that?
None.
That the white man has proven to be absolutely disagreeable to get along with in peace. No one has been able to get along with the white man. All the peoples of color have been subjected to the white man's wrath. We believe that his very nature will not allow him to practice true sharing, fairness, equity, and justice. Therefore, to the red man and woman, to the yellow, and to the brown, we say to you, the same rabbit dog that bit you, bit us too. Black power, all power to the people.